Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mod Hotep, to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress T, and certainly this is a wonderful day. Certainly always good to be with you and to be live and in living color. Today, we had our kickoff for the We Charge Genocide 21 project here in Philadelphia. Now we can in the hood, in our communities throughout the city, to do similar kinds of rallies, similar kinds of distribution of information, materials, and so forth, but also getting people to now sign on to the letter of intent. The letter of intent will, of course, be taken to the United Nations in December. We're looking for a 400 delegation to go with us to the United Nations to present what's known as the letter of intent. Now, the letter of intent is designed to begin to put things into proper order. Now, you know, we talk about miotic justice. So that differentiates us from others. You know, we got a lot of people talking about social justice nowadays. Well, that's fine. That's a good thing. It helps to bring attention and awareness and things of that nature. But we're talking about miotic justice. That entails not just justice per se, but truth, reciprocity. Of course, self-determination, I threw that one in. That's not necessarily an actual principle of miot, but we say it anyway. But certainly other principles of miot that are noted is, of course, righteousness, order, balance, harmony. Those are, in fact, principles of Ma'at, reciprocity, as well. So when you hear us talk about justice, we're talking about Ma'atic justice, which encompasses at least seven of the principles of Ma'at that most are aware of. Certainly, there are other principles, and certainly we strive to uphold them all as best as possible. But in this case and in this time, as we bring forward the Ma'atic epoch, we begin to do what is necessary in the context of reparatory justice. So again today, family, we began our first kickoff here in Philadelphia for the We Charge Genocide 21. We plan to come to other cities. We're working on Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, and other cities that we will literally be out in our communities, letting our people know what it is we're doing, why we're doing it, and how they can and should get involved. This is a one-on-one kind of grassroots effort to, again, help to educate our people as we raise them up, as we resurrect. Well, it's that time. So, okay, yesterday was, in fact, the Earth Day of the great Paul Leroy Robeson. And today's activity was part of a tribute to him because he certainly has inspired the We Charge Genocide 21 project. Of course, he and William Patterson and others, but in this case, Paul Robeson, because he lived in Philadelphia for quite a while, actually made his transition here in Philadelphia. And, you know, it is sad, but I really understand it a lot better. It is so sad that he died, some say kind of heartbroken, because, you know, he was really fighting for our people. If you heard this one speech in particular that he does in an interview, rather, not a speech, and he talks about what has happened to black people. He is so eloquent when he speaks, and he made it very clear that while others have plights and concerns and issues, as black folks, we have some that nobody else has, maybe not in this country. And that's the point that we're going to make clear as we proceed with the We Charge Genocide 21. Today, we had a lot of powerful speakers. And, of course, we gave information out to anyone and everyone for the most part because
We want everyone to know that this is what we're doing. But at the same time, we're not trying to recruit or to, appeal to everyone. No, we're not. And it's unfortunate that it has to be that way, but unfortunately, because so many have, for whatever reason, can't seem to do much of anything without other people. And I mean, and there's a time and a place for that. But certainly when we talk about the atrocities of our people, we have to keep that very clear. And as Brother Malcolm would say, make it plain. So we're going to do that. We are going to make certain that people understand. Surely we appreciate whatever support, whatever anyone wants to do in terms of allies and all of that. Wonderful. Definitely appreciate it. However, we're not dependent on it. We're not, all that impressed with it. None of that. It is time for black folks to do what we need to do for ourselves and make that clear that we are the force, the entity that's going to make certain that our freedom is obtained and sustained. We have to do that. And there can't be any confusion about that. So, again, big salute to those that came out today. I was a little disappointed that more black folks didn't come out, but no feeling what I do. I wasn't shocked at all because we have black folks in this city that talk black and conveniently be black for a festival or, some artsy thing. But when it comes to really fighting for issues, homelessness, prison, miseducation, very few of them show any real consistency in this city. And yes, I said it, and I can prove it. Said it, mean it, here to represent it. It's really unfortunate, but that has to be told and exposed. And I'm sure it's happening like that in other cities as well. But I'm in Philly, and I'm going to speak about what's going on here in Philly and invite you all to do the same about what's going on in your city. We've got to flush out the pseudo armchair fake folks in our community. We've got to. Now, today, again, we talked about recharge genocide. What black person in their right mind, any mind, don't understand that to the degree that they need to be doing something to support that? For real. I mean, really? What are you doing that lends to helping to change the situation? Be it, again, homelessness, environmental racism, and let's not even talk about political prisoners. Black folks in Philly, here we have, unfortunately, what some have called the premier political prisoner, yet I can almost count on my fingers how many actual black folks in Philly really remain consistent in dealing with that issue. And with that said, are not aligned with white people. Now, again, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with that when you're talking about developing, strategies and so forth and so on. But black folks have become so dependent, and the ones that are dependent on that entity, they're depending on some other diversity or some other kind of, orientation or some other stuff. Straight up black. I had no idea that it would be this problematic. I just didn't. But, wow. Oops. Here it is. But, again, some of us are very clear about that and are going to remain very adamant. So, again, big, big props to those that came out today. Sister Gabrielle, of course, always on point. Our brother Mhotep, of course, Sister Pam Africa just blew it up. Y'all know that, right? when she gets started, and when it's time to let it go, she just goes, and she did. But also, Professor Carlton Jones was in the house. Brother Arnell, Baba Yao. Bigger Dre was in the house. This was still a wonderful presentation with some spoken word. And, of course, our own Brother Ghani, songster,
Oh, my gosh, that brother, to hear his story, to talk about how he was incarcerated from the age, I think, of 15 years until he was like 40, to hear and to see the work that he's doing now in dealing with the prison issues. It was just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gathering, a wonderful kickoff. And, again, we're looking forward to others and to more. Let's see, who else? I don't want to miss anyone. Who else did we have? Of course, our sister Nikki came down from New York. That's what I'm talking about. New York is in the house today. Again, Brother Wali. I mean, it was just wonderful to see some serious black folks come out, speak their mind, speak their truth, and really get this kickoff what it was needed or what was needed. If I think of anybody else, I certainly will, because I don't want to miss anyone, because everyone, my brother, Baba Ngozi, again, soldiering as usual. Big ups to Brother Kamal with the sound. And just, you know, again, it was a wonderful kickoff. And for those Negroes who felt that they, you know, should not attend or participate, wonderful. Because all you're doing is really showing more about who and what you really are, for real, you know. And it's time. Because, see, I know for these past years since Mumia has been incarcerated, I know who has been out there helping in whatever kind of way, even if behind the scenes. I know who you are, and I know who you are not. So your card's getting ready to get pulled. Anyway, it was great, and thank you to everyone that supported. Okay, moving right along. Unfortunately, of course, DMX, they pulled the plug, but how many heard, and I saw the Chairman Fred earlier, he might be calling in. He missed his flight for where he was going, so he had to kind of try to rejuggle some stuff. But anyway, he might be calling in, and he and I did have a conversation earlier because he sent out some really nice pitch with him and DMX. They had a great admiration for him, for each other, rather. And as y'all know, DMX was wild as all get out. But his truth, his capability of putting out what he felt, believed, knew, saw, I mean, it was just real. It was real. Speaking of real, big shout out to Sister Keisha, Brother Tad, Brother Ashe. Oh, my gosh. This week's Thorough Black Talk, the brother. And I'm going to pull his name up shortly because we got to get him on our program and we got to support his project. That, you see, I like hip-hop. I mean, you know, I'm not from that era, but I like hip-hop. I like all kinds, anything that black folks do, I like it for the most part. I never liked Country Western, though. I'll tell y'all that one. There was a dude named Charlie Pride years ago that brought country western into the black community. Never liked it. So there's a few little genres, and then we don't even talk about today what's going on with that. But I could never get into hillbilly music. I don't care who sung it. Anyway, but anything that black folks do for the most part, I like. Now, when it started getting stupid into the gangster rap and the exploitation and the stuff they were showing with the women and the sisters and all that, no, that was something else. But KRS-One, the old KRS-One that is, Tribe Called Quest, Diggable Planets, Poor Righteous Teachers, I mean, the Public Enemy, hey, yes, knew all their stuff. So I'm saying that to say, some of DMX's stuff was just raw, real, and just, you know, powerful. So it was a little sad to see him, but my point is, did you hear about the possibility that he didn't die from an overdose, that they claimed he supposedly did? They said that, you know, he had a heart attack as a result of an overdose. Well, we have information that disputes that situation, and I first got it last week, actually, when Sister Tawanda sent it to me. But then when I talked to Chairman Fred earlier today, he confirmed that the family and others are saying No, that's not what happened. What they're saying happened is he took the vaccine. Ooh. A few days before having the heart attack or falling into whatever we fell into, he took the vaccine. Now, I have not hardly seen that anywhere. You got to dig that up. But I do have an article that does, you know, talk about that briefly. So for those who might want to see it, you know, just email me. I'll send it to you. But when I talked again to Chairman Fred, he confirmed based on his intel that, yeah, that is what's being said in certain circles. And, of course, you won't hear that, at least commercially, because okay, obviously encouraging everyone to take the vaccine. With that said, I want to send a special prayer out, warm love out to Sister Johanna Fernandez, who unfortunately also took the vaccine and did not, you know, really have a positive kind of result from it. She's okay, but definitely she, you know, there was some unpleasantness, let's put it that way. And people got to understand that if you have certain jobs and you want to keep your job, then you will be required to take the vaccine, okay? Anyway, we all know what's going on. And by the way, we will have a session coming up soon to talk more about our position on the vaccine as we continue to reserve our right and to fight to make certain that another type of treatment for the COVID or whatever is available as it is provided by the Cuban medical team. So we're going to be talking to Brother Obi very soon. There's some new developments coming up with his project in the very near future. And also we will be moving forward with our own connections with Baba Yao and others to consolidate our efforts to a greater extent in seeing, you know, what can we possibly do to get the vaccine or, shall we say, the treatment that Cuba has. I mean, it's been proven to work in other countries. Without all of this madness that's going on, all these side effects and deaths, by the way. Anyway, moving right along. So yesterday was Paul Robeson's Earth Day again. Tonight's program is another salute or tribute to him in remembering his work, We Charge Genocide. But as I said earlier, he was heartbroken. He died with a broken heart, as several have, because black folks were negligent in doing what they needed to be doing to support the efforts of serious frontline black men and women. This government whiteballed him. He could not get gigs, all kinds of stuff. And so it really, you know, hurt him that his own people did not fight for him to the degree that they should have. See, and I get it. Believe me, but the difference is we're going to do something about it to the best of our ability as we proceed with MWM and other components and our allies and so forth and so on, what we're building. Because this madness has to stop. It has to be clear that not all of us are chumps. Not all of us are phonies. Not all of us are just here to get a paycheck. Off of pain, off of poverty, off of suffering. And we have to make sure that people know that for some of us, we do this because we have to uphold our ancestors' blood, sweat, and tears, etc., and for the future, for our children, etc. Anyway. Moving right along. Y'all could sound so good today because it was a good day. We had a wonderful outing today. And it was kind of interesting because an Asian group also was fighting for
you know, what they were fighting for. I just found it amazing. Woo! Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Okay, so one other thing before we get ready to bring in General Parker, who's going to give us the report that's he's still in Tulsa and will be there until the 100-year anniversary commemoration of the atrocity that occurred there, the bombing of Black Wall Street, the murder of our people, et cetera. So he's going to give us a report, a little insight into what's going to be going on, and MWM will be working closely with the committee there. We've already connected, and we're building some further relationships that we'll tell you about in the very near future. But we'll be bringing General Parker on shortly. Again, before we do, one other big salute. Tomorrow, April 11th, will mark the Ancestral Day for the great Steve Coakley. Yep. Steve Coakley made transition on April 11th. Now, it's so interesting to me that as today I watched and listened and this whole week and just for a while observing how certain people move and operate, the teachings of Steve Coakley, I mean, it's just so easy to identify certain behaviors now. It's so easy now to know and understand certain modus operandums, certain gatekeepings, certain usurpers. It's so wonderful to now be able to put names and faces with deeds of distress and disaster for our people. I just love to be able to do that. And it was Steve Coakley that really, really put it into perspective like none other. Just as Joe Jones did here in Philly, the war correspondent, that really knew how to just bring an issue or a point in such clarity. Well, so did our brother Steve Coakley. And so we're committed to make certain that we continue his work. That's why we've had people on our program who have also done work in that area in terms of the Boule. And we're going to help bring greater clarity to that issue, how it operates, why, and what we must begin to do about it. Now therein is the new point. What are we going to do about it after 100 years? Anyway, we're going to talk more about that a little later on because we do have a plan, family. I can tell you that. We do have a plan. And needless to say, it's going to be rough because you don't go up against the so-called powers that want to be without there being casualties. And so best believe, unfortunately, some of our people are not going to survive some of what's getting ready to happen, particularly as they have ingrained themselves into taking that vaccine. That has begun their demise, unfortunately. But what can we say? Okay, anyway, moving right along. We have one question for you, and then we're going to get ready to bring in General Parker. And the question is, why does it seem that there are more white folks, we call them off-white people, but I'll just keep it at white folks for now. Why do it seem that they care more about issues surrounding human rights violations and prison issues than black folks? I find that really interesting. Now, no, don't think I don't have an answer or know some parts of that answer, but I would certainly like to hear what some of you think about that. Why do you think that there seems to be more white folks who are concerned about human rights violations, human rights issues, and prison stuff than black folks? Have y'all noticed that? Because I certainly have. And I'm just like almost dumbfounded by it, knowing that the majority of black folks are in prison. I mean, it's us in those prisons. When it comes to human rights violations in the U.S., I don't care what nobody say. Asian, Indian, whatever. There's no argument. There can't be. So we can't keep trying to mess this stuff in unnecessarily. It has its place, but for certain, there has to be a distinction, and we're going to make that distinction. But going back to the question, what do you all think? If you have a response, please press 1 now. Just a few minutes before we bring General Parker in. What are your thoughts? Why is it there seems to be – now, note, I'm not talking about the masses. No, let me be real clear. I'm talking about folks who are in various groups and organizations, who have read a lot of books, looked at a lot of DVDs, visit YouTube a lot for information, gone to lectures, et cetera. Why is it the action, let me be very specific, the actions relevant to human rights violations of our people and prisons, but you can select any area of human rights violation because we have 21. So let's deal with homelessness, gentrification, mass incarceration, again, prisons, political prisoner, again, prisons, inferior or inadequate health care, access. How about inadequate homes, housing, things that all of these things. Let's not even talk about environmental racism like Flint, the water. These are all human rights violations, as stated by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So my question again is, given the fact that we are the ones who we can prove how we have medical apartheid, how we have been tested on for stuff. I can go on and on, but I'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts, Hanley? Why do you think so few black folks, our people, have very little direct action when it comes to human rights violations of our people? And, of course, I said prison issues because that was the one that we were focusing on today. So if you have a comment or a thought on that, please press 1 now. I would love to hear what your thoughts are about that. Doesn't seem like anyone has a thought about that. Wow. That's kind of interesting. Okay, well, let me check to see if General Parker's in queue. Okay. Uh-oh, we do have someone that has a thought about it. Well, that's good, because I'm raising that issue for a reason, family. I really am. It's very interesting, because we have to change some of our language, or if not change it, add in to some of our language when we're talking about certain things. That time. So we're going to begin that process. Okay, we're going to go to caller at 0978. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 0978. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, that's Brother
okay,
General.
Okay, greeting. Okay, Joe, stay right there for one moment. I'm going to go to caller at 9498 to get a quick comment. Then we're going to come right back to you, General Parker. 9498,
okay.
Your mic.
Hello, Sister Filet. Hello, Philly. Hello, family.
Hey,
how y'all
Brother
doing?
Ray Ray. Oh,
that's
wonderful. Wonderful.
It's a very strange phenomenon that they always join in the fight to help the poor black people that everything is happening to, and we just have to do something, you know, and they jump into everything that's that they could have a part of to maybe control it, to still have control.
Yeah, well,
because I don't know.
Go ahead, Brother.
I don't have the correct answer to it, but like you said, they jump into everything.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem, Brother. Well, one of the problems, Brother Ray Ray, because I watched this in particular with Mumia. When Mumia was first almost killed, for the first year, the black community here in Philadelphia was active. You know, I mean, they were meeting, they were, you know, rallying, whatever. After he got convicted, everything stopped. You hear me? I know. I saw it. I was there. Everything stopped. Now, it has only been in the past 2 years that more black folks in Philly have participated in the rallies and so forth. You've been to Philly, Brother Ray Ray. You know, and you've been to Mumia rally. You know who the majority of them were.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, something is, even though we know that the other people want to take control or want to make it, what the hell is going on with us? You see? Because the only way that they're able to,
I think very few of us are long distance runners, like the late William Mackey Jr. used to say. What you need is long distance runners, and it's only a few people that stand the test of time. And you are one of them, Sister Pam, and people like that. You know. You still there fighting and clawing?
Wow.
White folks just want to have something to do so they could say that they've been down with it, so they could. And a lot of them get paid to do it too. So.
But Brother Ray Ray.
Yeah.
Brother Ray Ray. Well, where's the short distance runners at? You know. Because I feel often, too often, we don't have any of our people standing up even in the beginning. And I personally have gone through things that I know my people should have stood up for to help me out. But if I don't get out of it myself, I don't get out of it, you know. But even when I try to get them to help me with other issues affecting us, they're not even there for the short haul, even the long haul. But some of the white folks, I can tell you, I'm here in Oklahoma, I'm in Tulsa, and I was standing in front of this this mural they had painted down there. There was a picture of Black Wall Street, and then on the side they had a list of all the businesses that were burnt down. I had this one old white dude come up to me. He asked me, said, "Is that all the businesses that was burnt?" I said, "Yeah." And you know, this dude just started crying right then and there. So I think some of the times white people get involved, they do it earnestly because they feel guilty, because
You definitely have a point with that, because that's when they say, well, we just got to help these old poor black people that stuff been happening to so many years since they've been in America.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, but I don't think all of them think like that, you know.
Well, No, I'm not here to debate you on it. It don't have to be all of them. It don't have to be some of them. But sometimes that's how it rolls. They sure came out in droves from the media.
Sometimes you got someone to stand up and say, you know, this shit was wrong, and I'm standing up and saying something.
Oh yeah, they will stand. They did it for Reuben Hurricane Carter. The brother couldn't get no way.
You got our folks to sit up and say, "Hey, man, every man for himself." You know, I'm too busy. Hey, if they do business, if they worry about you that way, they ain't thinking about me. You know, and I got to get mine. You know, so I can't be. I even had a brother tell me that. Said, "Man, I like what you be standing up for and all the fight, but I can't support you and help you, man. I might end up going to jail myself fooling around with you, Brother Parker."
Only until something happens to them.
There you go.
Only until I remember, and I'm going to be quiet. We was in the slave theater when in the beginning, and everybody talking about what they're doing over there with them black folks and this and that and all these lectures, and it was a guy that I knew real good, worked for transit and this and that, had a nice little job, and he used to talk about them people over there, this and that. And why you go? And the police slammed his ass up against the wall one day.
There you go.
And the next day he was over there. You think y'all could come over there and help me out? Mm-hmm. Only until something happens.
There you go.
Right. So that's why, again, in getting ready to hold, and next month, family, get ready. We're getting ready to hold our first free plebiscite session. Yep, pre-plebiscite, so that those who want to, those who are interested in wanting a sense of freedom will be able to do so. Now, it's not for everybody. We already know that. It's just like some people are Muslim, some people are Christian, some people are Buddhist, whatever. So everything is not for everyone. But this is what we do know. As General Parker just said, as Brother Ray Ray just said, some of our people are going to be long-distance runners. That may not be a whole lot in comparison, but I think it'll be enough. And those of us that are, we need to get each other's backs. That's what we need to do.
That's right.
We need to make sure we know who we are and make sure that we're getting each other's backs. Bottom line. See, we're solution-oriented. We know what some of the problems are. Therefore, we know what some of the solutions got to be. So these sessions are coming for those who are serious, those that are doing the work, ain't looking for a pat on the back or a check, but are here to honor our ancestors and respect ourselves. Anyway, all right, Brother Ray Ray, anything else you want to share with us?
All right, thank you.
Coming up with the Mackey Lecture Series?
Sorry, family. Well, you can view all the latest lectures on the Brooklyn William Mackey Jr. History Club on YouTube. The last lecture with Dr. Lewis was unbelievable. I put the two books on my Facebook page. I'm going to be sending out the Zoom information probably tomorrow. There's going to be a part two on Wednesday. The event is going to be live and on Zoom, COVID-19 and the New World Order. And you can ask Dr. Arthur Lewis any questions that you have. Not a debate, but questions. It's going to be real good. It was real good last two Wednesdays ago. It was very interesting. And plus the handouts that Dr. Lewis writes up on his own and gives out. And that's a person that's a long-distance runner because he's been in the mix for a long time trying to give out the information.
Okay.
But I will send you the link. I will put it on my Facebook page, Craig Smith, and send out the link so people can see it via Zoom. But it's always on the Brooklyn William Mackey Jr. History Club, all the lectures with Trust Graham, Brother Mike Graves, Keisha, and we're moving slowly, and hopefully it's going to broaden back up. But we're going to try to do what we got to do and
delay.
And like I always say, you don't have to do what you're doing. Other people, that's what you don't have to do what they're doing. This is what you call long-distance runners. You can say later we don't have to do it. We could just die out and say later for it, and the people could be forgotten. But you do it because it's in your blood, and you just keep trying. You keep just keep trying to do what you do.
That's right. Well, that's why Brother Ray Ray is so important.
It's,
t-
it's 10 minutes after 11. It's 10 minutes after 11 at night. What's half the people doing? Watching a comedy show on TV.
Oh, yep. Well, it's all right.
Okay.
All right, my brother. Well, thank you. And, hey, we're going to keep on keeping on. Thank you, Brother
Ray.
Keep
on keeping on, as I think Curtis Mayfield said. Keep on keeping on, I think he said it.
That's right. Keep on pushing. That's what he said.
Keep on pushing, Curtis Mayfield. Just keep on pushing.
That's right.
It's a hard push, but we do what we can with what we got.
That's right. Well, you know, again, we're going to keep moving. We'll free Mumia, free all of our political prisoners. Our next event is going to be May 1st, May Day, since people focus on that as a time to, you know, for workers to come together. Are we saying black workers, are you down with or up with fighting for your human rights? We're going to see May 1st here in Philly, Malcolm X Park.
Well, like you say, a lot of white folks have came out for Mumia. Good, bad, or indifference, they have packed it out. So what can you say?
Well, I'm going to say we're going to do what we need to do. We're going to represent the way we're supposed to represent, and that's all there is to that, period. Whoever does or doesn't, that's not going to be on us. We will
do
our part. He's our native son.
That's right.
You know, so, hey, it's all good. All right, Brother Ray Ray.
All right, thank you.
All right, family. Of course, that's Brother Ray Ray, New York, in the house. We're going to go to one more before we go back to General Parker. Caller, you are at 7169. 7169, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, The New Day.
Greetings, Empress. How are you?
Hey,
can you hear me?
How's my brother? Thank you for coming out today.
Yes, thank you for having the presentation, and it was beautiful. You have asked the question about why we aren't showing up. And like Brother Ray Ray said, it's a long-distance run, and everyday fires and alarms and attacks that people have to put out and deal with every day, it takes a toll. And you might really intend to do what's right by your people, but then you got to worry about, oh, the job, oh, my children, oh, other family members, oh, my health. And it just keeps on coming at you. And over time, the choices are, is it going to be the immediate fire or is it going to be the other things? And over time, over a long period of time, people get worn down, you know, and it's by design. That's a perfect strategy that they imply, that they employ. Keep people just bombarded with stress and trauma, and they won't have time to come together and do these fighting events that we need to really be a part of. And that's my observation.
Wow. Well, thank you, Brother Ngozi. And I used to think that, I mean, I still do to a degree, but I also have another thought in that regard, and it's this. When you become grown, and I don't mean necessarily by age, I mean in terms of your mind, you realize you have to make decisions. Now, you're absolutely correct, but here's the analysis. Was that not true during the 1950s and the 1960s? Did people not still have to worry about or be concerned about their families, their job, their this or their that? Was that also in existence during the 50s and the 60s?
It was.
Yeah. It was. Now, so hold that point, hold that thought right there. So now, so if those same issues, for the most part, in terms of people got to feed their families, they got to work, they got to do this, but yet folks was doing stuff. Folks was doing some serious stuff.
They still
and they didn't even have the internet to organize everybody.
Yeah, but my point is this, General Parker. See, Brother Ngozi is right in terms of they keep us bombarded with this, that, and the other. But my point is, at some point when you become an adult, you have to make some decisions. And, of course, the decisions is, you know, feed your family. But I'm saying they had them same choices. They had to stay. They were confronted with those same issues 60 years ago. But people still fought. They still got involved. Even if they had to cook the chicken dinner for the people who was out there doing stuff, they still did something. Even if they couldn't do, you know, they couldn't go to the rally or they couldn't, you know, go, but they did something. See? And they had the same issues of life and everyday stuff as we do, today too. No, something else is happening. And again, that's just my thought about that. You know, Brother Ngozi, something else is going on now. And we need to really recognize that for whatever reason, the Negroitis machinery has just went into full force. And lastly, here's the other thing that I've noticed in studying the 50s and the 60s. People would get hurt. Meaning, if you did certain things in the community, you need to think twice about certain things.
Okay.
Right? See?
Right.
Some of that it's not happening now. People do whatever they want to do. They get away with whatever they want to get away with. And in the presence of real strong black men, It's not there. No, whether people agree with the nation or not, it's one thing. The presence of the nation in most communities meant something. There was visual there. So I'm saying, in these lessons, what are we going to do? Those of us who understand what's going on, what are we going to do? Because it's time. But Brother Ngozi, I thank you always, as usual. And again, your spirit was definitely, it was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day.
Weren't they powerful?
Yes, they were.
Wow. And Sister Pam is always Sister Pam is always on fire. But I mean, Brother Arnett, the information that he brought about how the city sells the developers' properties for $1. And then they turn around and sell it for $500,000. And he has that document. He has those documents. He's researched it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff that's been going on in this and other cities for quite a while. And black folks are sitting back letting this stuff happen. With homelessness, how do you have 44,000 properties or parcels or whatever and all these people homeless? How does that happen? I mean, you know, it's a rhetorical question. We know how it happened. But I'm just saying, where's the black voice speaking out against homelessness to the degree of really doing something? And this is what we're now dealing with. So the jig is up. It's time to, you know, call the spade a spade. If folks are not coming up with some at least potential solutions, then we need to put them in the, you know, the group over here or whatever. All right, brother. Thank you, Baba Ngozi. Much love to you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, same here.
All right, let's go back to General Parker and get our report. General Parker, what's going on there in Tulsa?
Oh, how you doing there, Empress G? Yeah, it's the same old, you know. Black folks keep complaining and crying about wanting to get ahead. ain't gonna do nothing seriously to do it, and if they do get opportunity, they trying to X each other out, you know. But I'm still here doing what I do. So they decided now that they got a commission together. They got a certain amount of groups that they got that came together, and those are the only ones they are authorizing to have any commemoration events. And anybody want anything else? Got to go to them. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
I wish I wasn't. So,
oh my
it's
God.
The more of us who are excited to go and get together and do whatever we were planning to do out north anyway, you know. So, they got all the money and doing everything downtown and putting on the show down there. But the people that really need the attention and need the reparations and need the services, well, we're going to make sure that they are going to be attended to that week. So.
Wow. Here we go
and
again.
And to get back to your question, I think what happened was over the years, we've lost our spirit, you know. And in losing our spirit, we lost our courage.
Mm.
Because all those things Brother Ray Ray's wisdom say, but we were still going to work. We were still had to watch kids. We still had to do a lot, all that stuff back then. And like I say, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones and smartphones. And it cost you your lives to stand up back then. You know, now we
right.
don't even want to lose
That's
our Cadillac
right.
or our job. You know, folks were losing
That's
their
right.
lives back then. So, you know, it
That's
all depends
right.
on what you're willing to sacrifice. So me and myself,
right.
I couldn't stand by. You know, because I put myself in that person's position. I couldn't stand by and just watch them violate somebody else's rights.
Right.
I know if I was standing there with George Floyd, I probably wouldn't have beat the police. I'd have rushed them, you know, but I'm not going to sit there and watch you keep your neck, your knee on this man's neck. I couldn't live with myself, you know, so.
Right,
right. Wow. Got down, that was tough enough. It's just I couldn't live with myself after the consequences.
Right.
You know, he died and did something. So.
That's right.
So I think that. Plus, y'all been taking the men out of the community for so long, and y'all raising these bunch of little, I don't even know what to call them now, but the guys want to grow up and fight for the right to wear a skirt and all that other stuff, you know, instead of making sure that they are the men and the model for their family and the children. But anyway, that's me, and I'm old-fashioned. I grew up in a different time, so I'm not a feminist,
I mean, no.
and I don't support anyone.
No, some things are fundamental.
Ain't going. Yeah.
No, you couldn't be a feminist, General Parker, because technically, I mean, you know, there are people who use that word or label, but that's about white women. So you couldn't be a
right.
feminist.
There
that's
you go.
That's
what I keep trying to tell my
but
sisters, you know. And if they got any doubt,
yeah.
tell ask Soldier the Truth and the rest of them that helped fight for that cause for them, and then they had to ask, am I not a woman, you know. No, we were just worried about white women getting the right to vote, you know. You go back to being the darker that you are, you know, simple as that. So, but anyway,
whatever
I digress.
Reason, no, but that's okay. Sometimes we have to. That's part of Sankofa. You have to go back and fetch it to bring it forward.
There you go.
Yep, that's a Sankofa thing. but anyway, I'm really kind of saddened to hear that the mentality that we've been talking about, again, some call it the Boule mentality, some call it the Negro mentality, but in either case, it's definitely not about self-determination for us as a people, period.
Right.
So
right.
I'm really sad to hear that once again the enemy has been able to give a few something and then they end up controlling the whole thing.
Right.
Wow.
And that goes contrary to the entire concept and spirit of the Greenwood District and Black Wall Street. The Black Wall
right,
Street was
right.
a community that was self-contained and self-reliant, okay? And it was one for all and all for one. That's why the massacre began, because they arrested that boy on false charges. And once the blacks heard about them whites gathering outside the courthouse talking about they're going to go in and lynch the boy for a false accusation, talking about he assaulted some white girl on the elevator, about 75 of them guys got together and grabbed their rifles, and they went down there. They said, oh, no, Sheriff, you need some help. We're not going to let this boy be lynched, you know. You're not going to find that nowadays, you know. But that's what they did back then. And they said, we one go down, we all go down. And that's exactly what happened then. Said, if he die, we all die, you know. And they try to kill them all, too. So.
Right. Wow. That says a lot. Well, I got a message earlier from Professor Griff, and he is going to be holding some classes soon on riflery, on guns. Okay, so we kept missing each other today, but I can tell you all, as soon as I get the information, I will certainly pass it on to you. We're going to try to get him on the program next week. But I know that his classes starts at the end of the month. So certainly between now and then, we should be able to have him on. But, you know, again, what we realize is we've got to do this ourselves. We've got to now make something that we help, particularly, we got to make sure that our young brothers are given some fundamentals in such a way that we're giving them proper training. See, you know, we keep talking about what's going on, violence and all of that, but what kinds of things are we talking about doing that will educate and really, you know, guide some of our young folks? For example, see, again, anything that I talk about, I'm also working on or actually doing, meaning MLM is establishing clubs, right? We're going old school because in doing research, we know that our people were very active in clubs, right? So we're kind of re-embracing some of those ideas or concepts. So we're starting for young girls and women, right, a rifle club, an archery club, and a fencing club. Now, we already have the fencing instructor. We almost, I think we have the rifle instructor at the second half. All we need is the archery instructor. Wow. And in that way, our young girls and women will learn the technique, the whatever, as it pertains to archery, fencing, and riflery. So it's not only an issue of self-defense, it can also be a profession. There's tournaments for all of those things. There's competition for all of those areas. And it creates a mental discipline. You see? So now we talk about our young girls and how some of them are just, you know, but wild, of course. But what are we talking about doing that is going to change that? So when you put these young sisters into situations or you know, other kinds of environments, for lack of a better word, the possibility of changing or shifting the paradigm exists. You see? So I'm saying these things because, again, we're going to get ready to see now who's really who in our communities who are really serious, because we're going to watch now the work that's being produced. I will never forget General Parker as a sister here in Philly, because, you know, folks talk about me like a dog, which is good, because, you know, 90% of them are not about real serious Black folks moving forward, so I'm good with it. But one is
you're talking about this, but you're getting things accomplished, so.
Oh, no doubt.
If you,
no doubt.
If you ain't getting down to college, they ain't talking about you. You ain't doing nothing.
But that's a part of the problem that we're going to also address in some other ways. But here's the point I was making. So one sister told whoever it was, she said, well, look, just outwork her. Outwork her. But see, that's right there. We already know that ain't
right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
See, but that is now what we have to look at. Who's doing the work, and what is that work? What is it? What is it lending to? What is it leading to? Because if it's just about helping to sustain the system, then you're part
right.
of the problem.
Right.
The problem, okay? So 100 years commemoration of one of the most horrific situations of a black community.
Now, remember, that's just one of them. Because, see, this year was happened after a long string and line of them because I guess they've been wanting to get rid of black towns anyway because just 2 years prior, you had the Red Summer, you know, when it went through it. And I think the most horrific one before this one was the one in Chicago. But they had them in cities all around the country, you know, trying to get rid of black towns where blacks had their own cities and they were prospering, you know. So that, like I say, this little excuse about the boy got on the elevator with the white girl, that was just, if it hadn't been that, they'd have came up with some other excuse because they wanted some excuse to go in and loot and rob these black folks because they were envious and jealous of them. They couldn't understand how out of all them laws and how all this oppression that these black folks were still thriving, you know, and not only thriving, I mean, doing way better than them, you know. So they just had to, they had to take it. And the Ku Klux Klan was really heavy here back then in Oklahoma. Tulsa just got founded in 1906, and I think the year before they had found oil here, so that. And the town just grew, like, overnight. So, and I think that was a nickname for it. They called it the overnight town. But they had been living here since, like, 1832. So they had started trying to navigate and steer people, like blacks and minorities and the Native Americans, toward the Oklahoma Territory. As a matter of fact, this is part of the Indian Nation that Tulsa is located on, the Cherokee Nation. So through the Trail of Tears, they had brought the Native Americans here, and the Native Americans came here with some of their enslaved slaves. Okay, they were slaves that the Native Americans owned, and they brought them with them when they were forced to leave Florida and other parts of southeastern America. They were forced to come here to Oklahoma. So that's how Tulsa was founded on this little parcel here. And it was about 10,000 African-American slaves, former slaves that came with the tribes. And then they subsequently they integrated into the tribal communities here. And they acquired a lot of land, which they called Greenwood, through the Dawes Act. It was a U.S. law that gave land to individual Native Americans because blacks weren't allowed to own land at the time, see. So many of the black sharecroppers, they were fleeing racial oppression. They came here and relocated to this region as well as looking for a better life after the Civil War. Because, you know, a lot of them, they ended up going back and had to be sharecropping, ended up doing the same work they were doing before they were freed, you know. So, which was caught back into another system of slavery, you know, for sharecropping and all the other systems they put you back into now. And Oklahoma was being promoted as a safe haven for African Americans who come here to start in the Indian Territory. As a matter of fact, there was a state auditor from Kansas, and he was black. And he came here, and he was trying to get. He wanted to make Oklahoma a black state, but he wasn't successful in doing that. But there were many black cities here in the state of Oklahoma. I mean, all black cities. So the largest number of black townships were located here in Oklahoma between 1865 and 1920. And O.W. Gurley, a wealthy black landowner, he bought 40 acres of land in Tulsa, naming it Greenwood, and that was after the Mississippi town of Greenwood, Mississippi. And Greenwood was built for black people and by black people. It's kind of like FUBU, for us, by us, you know.
Right.
And he even loaned money to people who wanted to come here and start their own businesses.
Wow.
So, that time, Greenwood became self-contained and self-reliant. Greenwood had his own newspaper. They had luxury shops. They had restaurants, grocery stores, movie theaters, barbershops and salons. They owned library. They had pool halls, nightclubs, doctors, lawyers, dentists, banks, real estate agents, their own bus lines. They even had their own airplanes. So, like I said, it was self-contained and self-reliant. A dollar changed hands 19 times before leaving this community. And if you look at the stats now, they say a dollar stay in the black community 2 hours after a black person is paid now. 2 hours, where before it changed hands 19 times with the 19 different businesses before it left and went back out of the community. But anyway, it's a 19-year-old Dick Rowland who had to use the bathroom. He was a shoeshine boy, and the only bathroom they had for black men was up on the top floor, up on the roof of the building or something like that. And she was an elevator operator, this girl named Sarah Page, I think that was her name. She was a 17-year-old, a white elevator operator. And I think what happened is that people don't know the story. They say either he tripped getting into the elevator or something, you know, and they accused him of assaulting the girl. Well, anyway, this angry white mob went down to the courthouse to demand that the sheriff hand him over, and the sheriff refused to. Well, the blacks had heard about that. There was about 75 of them, so they showed up down there with their rifles. Well, I was 25 the first time. And they asked the sheriff, you know, if they could help him out, and the sheriff refused to help. But the sheriff did refuse to turn Dick Rowland over to the white boys who was kept surrounding the courthouse because talking about they were going to lynch him. So, but a lot of these blacks were World War One veterans, and they went to the courthouse to offer their help in guarding Rowland. And after word spread that them blacks showed up with guns, even more whites showed up to about a crowd of 2,000 of them. And then when the blacks heard about that, 75 of them showed back up the next time. And the sheriff denied both of them again, you know, said he didn't need neither one of their help and he wasn't turning Rowland over. Well, the second time the blacks showed up, the white guy asked him, said, "What you plan on doing with that gun?" He said, "I'm going to use it if I have to." So the white boy tried to grab it from him. A shot went off, and that's when all hell broke loose. So. After that sermon, they used that as an excuse to descend on Greenwood. And they started looting homes and all the businesses, and they burnt them down. And every time I hear the story, it goes from anywhere from 35 blocks up to 40 blocks. And today I heard a story that said it was 50 blocks, you know. But it encompassed the area between Greenwood and Peoria Avenue and Archer and Pine. And those are the streets that the Gap Band is named after, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, G-A-P, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, the Gap Band. And
right.
He's from here, also Charlie Wilson. So. But, yeah, they are.
Wow.
Sorry about that. They firebombed these homes. They ran these people even further north in Tulsa. And that's what the problem is today, is that all the blacks live north of 36th Avenue here, or 36th Street, rather. And they refuse to do any improvements north of 36th Avenue. And they don't have a grocery store up there. They don't even have a hospital up there. They talk about the public schools up there between there and the difference between South Tulsa and North Tulsa. They said the difference is so vast. They said the schools up there are nothing but a direct school-to-prison pipeline. The people the residents of North Tulsa, their life expectancy is 11 years shorter than those living in South Tulsa. You can see the dilapidated homes. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I made some videos of it, you know, and I'm going to put them online soon, but it's just crazy what happened here. And that wasn't the end of it, because they still kept harassing them, and it wasn't a massacre, but, you know, they would still come through and terrorize them and oppress them over the years, you know, and lynch different blacks. So it didn't just end in 1921. It kept going, you know. And I sent you a video earlier tonight, the latest one that I got, and it tells a lot of the story. Okay. It was a pretty good one. So.
Okay. Wow.
So that's what we're here doing now. The 100-year anniversary will come up May 31st, and they burnt and robbed and looted them from May 31st into June 1st. And even after all that stuff started, the sheriff ended up deputizing all the white folks there and giving them guns and everything and allowing them to go into Greenwood. And the ones they didn't shoot, well, first of all, the guys that had the guns at first, they deputized these white folks and gave them authority to take these guns from these black folks and arrest them, and they put them in internment camps and stuff like that. So they took these men from the community, just like they're doing today. And then they went in and they just totally desecrated the entire community of the Greenwood District and the women and children, and they burned them out. They looted them first. And then they burned all their houses down, their businesses down. They said, let them never rise again. And a lot of these people, they just dispersed. Some of them left the area. Some of them left and came back. I think right now, as far as I know, there's three living survivors from that era, and they tell their stories from when they were kids and what had happened. And then you got the descendants of the massacre at Black Wall Street. And those are the people up north who are being left out out of this 100-year centennial commemoration event. So,
wow, that's like, I mean, it's really, really good to hear these things. I mean, some of the information I'm sure some have already heard, but it's good to, you know, to revisit or to rehear some of these things, because we need reminders, obviously. You know, people tend to get amnesia or something, and as a result, our actions doesn't represent, you know, what it should. And so,
hey, you know what the crazy part is? There's a lot of people here that didn't know what had happened in Tulsa if it weren't for all the stuff that's going on TV now and all the commemoration events and all that. We were interviewed by the Associated Press this morning. And the young lady there, she runs the Black Wall Street Market, and she was saying she didn't even have no idea about Tulsa till she was almost grown, because it was forbidden. They were forbidden to speak about it here. It didn't break out here until in the 70s. There was a guy named what was his name? I forgot what his name was. Now, I was just telling the reporter earlier. I had looked it up again, but he was trying to get the story out, you know. And they refused to let him do it. They wouldn't print it in the paper. They wouldn't let him talk on the radio. And he finally got it out in 1971. But they were forbidden to even bring it up. And even in this commemoration event, they refused to they told the people they're not allowed to use the word massacre. They want them to use the word riot.
Oh, my God.
And that was another thing back then. These folks, they lost all their property, their homes, their wealth, and everything, and they weren't even compensated for it, because the insurance company got out of it because they called it a riot. If they called it a massacre, they would have had to pay. But since they called it a riot, they got out of paying the claims. Nobody was ever prosecuted for it.
Yep, it sounds a little too familiar. One,
that there are so many people in Philadelphia who have no concept or understanding or whatever of May 13, 1985. They had no idea that a bomb was dropped here in Philadelphia in an urban environment where 65 homes went up in flames and 11 people were killed. There's people living
I remember
living
seeing
in
that
city.
On TV.
Right,
it happened.
But there are people living in this city who have lived here. I'm not talking about people just came recently. People who have lived here for quite a while who had no inkling that that even happened. So it seems to be something that these people have a very good way of doing.
And also, just like you said about no one was prosecuted, no one was prosecuted here, except for Ramona, that is, one of the victims. I mean, you know, we saw her come out of that burning building with her flesh coming off of her arms.
Right.
But, yeah, she was convicted. Yeah. But no city official. And that's something that the black community needs to do here in Philly, and we will. And that is to hold a, if not tribunal, at least something where the black community can literally give a declaration. Because it never happened. There was a, what was that thing called, the MOVE hearings or some stuff, some commission that the city put together, and they gave their findings. But that was not the black community. Not that we really have a black community anymore, by the way. These people live in neighborhoods now. But, you know, again, we're working on it. Wow. Okay, stay right there, General Parker. We got a couple of folks that have some comments or thoughts, and so we're going to bring them into the conversation. So, caller, you are at 9498. 9498, your mic is open, and welcome to the segment of New Day.
Oh, no,
nine,
no, no,
four,
I just
nine,
I forgot to, I just
oh,
forgot
oh,
to,
okay.
Forgot to cut it off, but it was, yeah, but it's funny when I was watching the movie, I think it was The Bondsman, that I was never a big fan of Samuel Jackson, but this movie about the two blacks that was buying the banks.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of hooked up this white boy. They taught him everything and put him in the front, and they was running around buying banks. These two brothers were smart, and they went down to Texas, and the same thing, like he said, the jealousy of the white man has always been a sticking point in any uplifting of blacks economically, financially. They always kind of had something to do with the downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Jealous white folks, jealous the same way you drive a Cadillac, they be wondering where the hell you got that Cadillac from and want to find out how they could take you down. But the movie was, I think it's called The Bondsman, or
mm-hmm.
I got it downstairs, but the two blacks that was buying banks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were very smart, and in the end, you know, the guy didn't go along with the deal that the white folks in Texas offered him, and he went to jail, but they had put two other banks now. But they were very smart and knew what they was doing there. But it was still jealousy, the same way he was saying, the jealousy of white folks to see blacks doing something, you know. And
wow,
that's been a message that this government has always betrayed. That's always been the message.
Right,
where
right.
We cannot control our own. Wherever we at, something always comes up where this government has something to do with the downfall of economic prosperity.
Right.
You know. Now, Tulsa, did they have their own police department, or was they dependent on the Tulsa Police Department, or did they have their own police department in Black Wall Street to protect their own?
General Parker, do you know if they had their own police department? General Parker?
Excuse me, can you say that again?
Oh. Did Tulsa have, did the Black Wall Street area, et cetera, have their own police department?
Oh, no. No, everything's run by the city now.
Everything
was run by the city. We're talking about back in the day.
No, they still had white police officers that would come through whenever they felt like it, you know. But they still had people that kept their own peace back then in the day. But now they don't even own Black Wall Street. The Greenwood Culture Center owns that whole area now, and they're the ones to put the stops on all the commemoration stuff. So
right, but like I know I read, I can't find the book. I had a book here on it. But what I'm saying is that during the highlight of that economic prosperity,
they didn't
have the force. They didn't have the army force to protect what they had with their own money that they was making.
I don't even know if they even had voting rights. I'm going to look that up.
I doubt it. I doubt if they had their own to protect their own the same way, you know, even though the Jewish community, they have a patrol that patrols where they at, even though they have the state police. But back then, I don't think the Black Wall Street had protection that they use their own money to protect their own stuff.
Right.
I don't think so.
Wow.
Always a sticking
point. That's a lesson we better learn as we proceed. It has to be an area that is definitely a part of whatever it is we're building, and security, some security aspect of it.
Like even when I was watching The Godfather, the Corleone family had their own muscle to protect their own, their interests.
Sure.
If anything happened and they tried this and that, they would take care of it. I don't think we had that in any economic prosperity that we was able to get in this country.
Right.
And the jealousy of blacks having something, you know, they just tore it down.
All right. Well, some of us have learned from some of the lessons and are moving forward accordingly. You know, we must do that. All right, Brother Ray Ray, thank you again.
Right.
Okay, family, we're going to get ready to move forward. Again, the question has to be at some point, what are we going to do? We know what some of the problems are. Certainly, we've talked about it here. You've talked about it other places. I mean, it's been talked about for quite a while, but what is not being talked about is, are we going to do? Now, of course, we can't talk about all of what we're going to do. That would not be wise, but certainly there are some things that we can talk about and should. So next week, we'll introduce to you, our New Day family, some of the upgrades and other things that we've been working on with New Day, with MWM, with the Million Black Women Rising, our global AFCOM village. For those who thought that, they're just talking about sister stuff, women stuff. No, that was your, you thought you were going to escape with that one. No, it's not going to work. Nope, I'm going to show you that. So the Global AFCOM Village is for all of our people, all of our communities, all of our families. But, again, they really want to get some stuff done, for real. So we're going to start introducing some of the components that we've been working on for some time. And, of course, encourage you, if you have not signed on to the letter of intent, we just hope that you do. Again, we're not trying to, shall we say, you know, some people, they just like keep like kind of like hogging at you. Just, you know, do this, please leave it. No. If you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. At this stage of the game, you know, to keep trying to, you know, tell people to do certain things, I mean, come on. It's going to happen, rest assured. But we're not going to beg people to do certain things. Not going to happen.
So again, we encourage folks to sign on to the letter of intent. You can go to the Collective Black People Movement website that they've designed for us for that particular project. We will put a website up soon. We're just trying to figure out how to hopefully utilize some software that will enable us to keep the signatures once we are ready for the next phases. So right now you can go to cbpm.org/WeChargeGenocide21 and you can sign on and support the letter of intent. We plan to take our first 1,000,000 signatures to the United Nations in December. It's kind of like a reenactment, but not. It's our own, but it is to commemorate what happened in December of 1951. 7 years ago, Paul Robeson took the petition to the United Nations charging this government with genocide on December 17th, to be exact. So we're going to do something similar because he already laid it out for us to do. We're just doing the next steps. But ours is going to include 21 points. Now, starting in May, we will do online sessions in regards to the We Charge Genocide 21, what those points are. What is our plan in introducing and you know, doing the task force connected to the 21 points? Okay, and I mentioned some of them earlier, gentrification, environmental racism, mass incarceration, COINTELPRO, crack cocaine epidemic, inferior education, inadequate health care, et cetera. There's 21 areas that we say is in fact genocide or has been and is genocide. Okay, so we'll be doing sessions on that. And again, this will happen around the time of Malcolm X's Earth Day, which you all know is May 19th. We will also begin to hold pre-plebiscite sessions so that people can get acclimated to what a plebiscite is, why it is, what we're looking at to accomplish, and have this major thing in 2023. Yep, that's our target time, to do a national qualitative plebiscite in 2023, the year before the end of the International Decade for African People, which was declared by the United Nations. We're in right now the International Decade for African People. So for those of you who want to know more information about that, MWM has its own task force, the International Decade for African People Task Force. We have our own. Because what we realize is that folks don't invite to the stuff. At least they don't invite us. So we create our own because we ain't waiting for them. Anyway, let's go back to our line. Family, if you have something you want to share with us right now, an event or some other thing, you certainly can do so. In the meantime, we're going to go to caller 7628. Welcome to the Center of New Day, and your mic is open.
Jumbo, this is Baba Yao, the African Cuban plumber.
Hey, Baba Yao.
How y'all doing today?
I'm
doing good. I'm going to get back to the bank. That was a great program we did today in front of the City Hall.
Yep.
And I'm going to go back to the bank. We'll go back to the bank. A bank thing. In D.C., we have a black credit union we've been starting for the last 5 years. And we did the paperwork part of it. It's called appeal.org is the website, I believe it is. And we at the point now we need $250,000 to start this credit union. And we got like $150,000. And now we're going to get the other 100, but we need membership. We need membership.
All right.
And so if anybody want to join, go to appeal.org. And it's ran black people, for black people with black money. Well,
okay.
It's white people on the money, but if anybody interested, check it out. Or you might arrange for the brother to come on one day.
Oh, definitely.
I've been with it, and we've been working together for the last year. So I'm talking about I've been working with y'all. So
yes.
Check it out. It's called appeal.org. And I'll, me and you will talk, and we'll try to arrange him to come on, and he can tell you more about it, because I'm a foot soldier. And I'll hook you up with the brother.
Okay. Oh, we would love to have him on. And if we like what we hear, Baba, I can tell you, we'll put that in for our 24-year anniversary as one of our initiatives.
Yes.
So those sisters and brothers that support us, that work with us or whatever, we'll make that one of our partnerships. If we like what we hear, absolutely. It's time.
Oh, that's good.
Time, actually. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Time is now.
That's right. And this kid's in. We're doing things now that's going to really show who is who. People be talking about black stuff. Well, okay, we're going to see. We're going to research and make sure that we present things in a very qualitative manner, and we're going to see who supports it.
Yes. And then hopefully we could do another up in Vernon Park in Germantown like we did today. I can help arrange that.
Oh, definitely. That's the plan, to go into the communities now. We plan to go to Malcolm X Park in May, so maybe Vernon Park for June. We plan to go to every city with the We Charge Genocide 21. Yep.
Yeah. All right, Black Power.
Black Power, Baba. all right. Yeah, Baba Yaga was with us today, family. And again, that was D.C. Okay, so, you know, we're claiming it all of it. We want our part of all of the land and all of what goes with it. So, you know, we're going to see now. We want to see who wants to stay a Negro. And I don't mean that in the context of the Honorable Marcus Garvey type of Negro. So let me be real clear. I want y'all to know who I'm talking about when I say Negro. Okay, or Negroes. Right? So we're moving forward now. And for those who are inclined to do so, we certainly invite you, welcome you. But for those who think they're going to come amongst us now, in a way that, you know, you just want really to keep Massa happy and whatever you can get from Massa, that's what you're trying to do. Well, guess what? We're not the ones. Don't. Please. Anyway, moving right along. Again, hopefully next week we will have Professor Griff with us, and if not, we'll definitely have his information in regards to the classes that he's getting ready to do. And we'll definitely have Chairman Fried coming in probably next week. As I said, he missed his flight tonight because there's some updates he wanted to give us with what's going on with him. Of course, the film has been a big hit, but perhaps more importantly, it has educated a lot of people, because a lot of people did not know anything about his mother, for sure. So if nothing else, a better, you know, understanding or a better glimpse of Fred Hampton's mother, Sister Akua and Jerry. At any rate, family, we're going to get ready to close this session out. We've had a long day today, and it is time to just do a little reflection and things that go with that. And so we're going to kind of close out a little bit early tonight. Again, I want to thank everyone that came through today. As Baba Yao
said, and Baba Ngozi, it was really, really nice. The vibration was definitely nice. Yes, and we're going to keep it up and keep it growing. And again, we encourage you all to support the We Charge Genocide 21. Of course, you can make a donation of any size. Of course, we do $2 Tuesdays every Tuesday, but you don't have to wait till Tuesday, and you don't have to wait for $2. And you can use our Cash App, which is $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. Or you can use the PayPal. And with the PayPal, you send that to an email address. It's our email address for the National Black Human Rights Project, and that is, of course, the email address is NB. Wait a minute, National Black, HR Project spelled out at gmail.com. Again, NB, HR Project at gmail.com. And one thing we want you to know, family, please, is this. What other group have you heard talk about black human rights? Now, there's been conversations about human rights. You have not really heard it being said in the manner that we are saying it in terms of consistency and, you know, a certain type of aggression, and that is we are saying black human rights because we want it made very clear what we're talking about and why. So with that said, you know, please feel free to support in whatever way. I think that's probably it for tonight. Jerome Parker, we're going to go to you for your closing comments for tonight. Jerome Parker? Okay. We're not hearing you. Okay. We'll move right along. And so, again, we're going to get ready to close out tonight, family. I want to remind you that you can go to YouTube. And by the way, this year is our 13th year anniversary. We've been doing this program for 13 straight years, independent, straight black talk all the way. Again, feel free to support. Woo! But I was really going to say also we're planning to go to YouTube soon. So look for that. And we're also looking at going to Patreon, I believe. So that, too, is coming. In the meantime, check out some of our allies, some of our sisters and brothers that we work with, that we, you know, encourage you all to support. And that is, of course, Thorough Black Talk every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Of course, Sister Keisha, Brother Tad, Brother Ashe, doing a wonderful job over there. Also, of course, Brother Mike Gray. And, of course, we're talking about Community Cop. Now you can catch it on any time, really. They usually come on Tuesdays, but you can catch it anytime. And just go to YouTube. And, again, we're talking about Community Cop. Let's see. Oh, of course, Brother Lee is on Blog Talk every Sunday with Africa on the Move. And, of course, that is from 7 to 9 p.m. And, again, that's on Blog Talk Radio, Africa on the Move. All right. We are developing the Black Asian Network so that we can combine some of the people that I just mentioned as well as some new folks. We want to have our own communications kind of initiative and interaction so that you're able to really have a selection of conversations, of interaction, of information. Also, of course, the Mumia Abdul-Jamal School of Journalism is coming as a part of our Ida B. Wells Institute. I'll give you more information about that next week. We're waiting for Mumia to send us the first phase of the curriculum that he's preparing for us for the Mumia Abdul-Jamal School of Journalism. But in the meantime, those who are interested, you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm
at AOL.com, and we'll start giving you some preliminary information. This is for beginners, for people who just want to, you know, have some camaraderie with folks who write. This is for all types of writing. It can be investigative reporting. It can be news-oriented. It can be, features. It doesn't matter, okay, for as long as it's, considered some form of journalistic or, some form of writing in that context, articles, things of that nature. It can be reports, et cetera. It's pretty flexible, so we'll be able to give you more information about that very, very soon, okay? By the way, Mumia is doing better. He's still, of course, dealing with the issue of congestive heart failure. So the struggle to him is real. It's very real, given the fact that one of the brothers recently made transition, Brother Chip Fitzgerald made transition about a week or so ago after being incarcerated for like 51 years. We can't. We just can't. Anybody that can sit back and hear that and know that Mumia is in grave danger in terms of illness and know that Barbara Russell Maroon Schultz, also stage 4 cancer, COVID, Iman Jamil Al-Amin, Dr. Mutula Shu, anyone that can sit back and not do something, you probably shouldn't be listening to this program, really. Okay. Anyway, we appreciate all who are, particularly those who are goodwill and really about doing something, want to do something, trying to do something. So we're going to get ready to close out. And like I said, we're going to leave you as the African speak in the spirit of Maud and Hotep. But remember, there will never be any real peace until there is Maotic justice. And Baba Yah, I think you're still with us. You know what we say. If there's no justice, there's no what?
Peace.
No
peace.
Peace.
No peace.
That's right.
No peace.
No peace. All right, family. We're going to leave you. And, again, have a very, very rest of the weekend and even a good week coming in. And we'll talk black with you next week. Same time, same location. And, some more good information, needless to say. But until then, we're going to say Pomoja to the Shenda. Together, 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 we shall win. Peace to you all.